Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Lots happening in the NBA right now. We are, 24, I want to say, games, give or take, for most teams the rest of the season. You said it, I think, right after the All-Star break. This month, March, this is the last full month of regular season basketball.
Yeah.
We're only going to get 10 days in April and then play in, and then here we go. Fun's about to begin. I was thinking about Victor Wembanyama. Well, I've been thinking about Victor a lot since I first heard of him and saw him, but a lot this season. And little tease for True Hoop listeners out there. David will be writing something about Victor soon. It'll come out sometime in the next week or so. But I was thinking about rookies and how the old adage used to be, David, rookies would often hit walls in the NBA season. Sometime around January, February, because this is the most games they've ever played in their entire life. They're gassed. But I was looking at Victor's trend line. I'm like, but here's a rookie trending in the opposite direction. Almost like, you always talk about reference points for players. He's learning and applying in real time. I was just taking a look at his last 10 on EPM. 8 of his 10 last 10 games have been plus EPM and big plus EPM games. And his two minuses were essentially net neutral games, minus 0.9 and minus 1.
You were high on Victor coming out, said best prospect you've seen since LeBron. I'm sure nothing has moved you off of that statement.
What I'm also impressed by is that most of the year he was 20% shooting threes, bad. He's up to 33 right now, which means he has been shooting it at a really good clip the last couple months. What have you been seeing from Victor?
So first of all, regarding the wall, so to speak, there's no, there's no a cliff necessarily. It's a roller coaster, and it tends to trend more down as the year goes on. But very often we'll see a player like what Victor's doing start creeping back up. And ideally, it's not that unique. You see a significant jump. That's what you want. Is when you made a comment, all these games, whatever. Well, it's just a whole different everything. Even for professionals that play overseas, this season is unlike anything they've ever done before. It takes some acclimating, right? Living on really on your own, which almost all of them are doing now. I didn't know Victor's situation, but some of these guys still live at home when they play overseas because they play locally. It just depends on where you live. And so this is all so new. Just on the road, you typically have a roommate in Europe. You don't have one very often. And sometimes you don't have them there either, but you never have one here when you're traveling. And so you kind of get acclimated, and the All-Star break comes and you get some pep in your step back. I think in the case of Victor and the Spurs, there's been some adjustment to how best to find him, where best to find him. The game has slowed down for him defensively. I did not say, I don't think, just that he's the best prospect since LeBron. I think I said he's the best of all time.
Yeah, yes, correct.
I think you're not wrong. You're not wrong. He was the best since LeBron, but probably a better prospect than LeBron too, simply because it's all genetics. I was thinking about this watching them against the Pacers and Miles Turner and Siakam, 6'10 and 6'9. They're little dudes. He's just so outrageously tall and long. And so, I'm going to write about him, I think, for next week or by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll have it out. He's understanding how to use his body better than ever. He's not a puppy dog anymore, defensively nearly as much. We did our call this morning, I compared him to Lawrence Taylor. Mm-hmm. Sense that you don't often have to game plan for an NBA defender. You do for a steals leader, and you do for a shot blocker. He is already striking fear into people who just don't want anything to do with the paint. Dwight Howard had an impact. Wasn't necessarily blocking all those shots, but his presence inhibited people from going to the paint more. So Victor is doing that. He can play make. I don't love it when he puts the ball on the ground and plays with it, but he's capable of dribbling it, and he's capable of passing off the dribble. Happy to do it. He's over 40% from three, I think, in 2021. I'm sorry.
In 2024.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some 2021 stats just now. So, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's just in the last 6 weeks, but I think it's the whole year so far over 3-point shooting, over 40%. So, I mean, he looks like an all-NBA player to me right now. Right now. Now, he doesn't have the resume for it.
Correct.
Because of his first few months. But now, yeah, he's spectacular. Really, really a gifted player. And feeling it. He feels himself in a good way. I'm not complaining. He's helping them. They just had nice wins go OKC in Indiana. And, I mean, I started thinking this, like, they're going to win championship with this guy. He's better than everybody.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, Victor getting acclimated to the NBA season. Part of it, too, is also his teammates getting acclimated to playing with him, right? Because he's so unique. You mentioned it's going to take these guys a little bit of time to realize no pass you throw is going to be too high for that dude. Get it up there, right? And you're starting to see them be a little bit better with getting him the basketball. They, you know, they're a bad team record-wise. So it's very rare, actually never happens, that a player on a poor team wins any major postseason, wins any major award. That's just how it usually goes.
Except for Rookie of the Year.
Except for Rookie of the Year, because they expect, you know, rookies to be on bad teams, which he likely will win that one. David, you can make an argument he's Defensive Player of the Year. Like, you could make that argument. Now, again, because of their record, they won't get it, but him as an individual defender, his metrics check out. And on Vegas, he is the number two betting favorite at plus 900. Now, the number one.
Who's number one?
Rudy Gobert, and it's minus 750. So it's like by a huge margin because the Timberwolves are the number one defensive team in the league. And, you know, Rudy's got that reputation for DPOYs. This would be number five, I believe, for him in his career. Or three or four. Is it three or four, maybe, or four and five?
No, maybe four.
Yeah, four. And so this will be his fourth or his fifth.
It's impressive.
It's a lot. Yeah. A lot of DPOYs. And, you know, you can make the case that Victor, he's been phenomenal. And to your point, you know, you think they're going to win a championship. I agree. The question, of course, becomes how do the Spurs continue to build around him going forward? Who on this team do we think is going to be there when they're ready to do all that championship winning? We don't think many people. Maybe one in Devin Vassell, possibly Johnson.
There you go. Yeah, I think Johnson as a six-man scorer, which he's doing now, he was the key. Besides Wemby being great, Devin's playing really well. Johnson really won the game for him in the fourth quarter. The second half, making tough shot after tough shot, he was very good. And I think Pop likes him a lot. But yeah, they need a point guard. They need some dudes, but they got the dude.
Yes.
How do you say the dude in French?
Le dude.
Le dude, yeah. They got le dude. Yeah, that he's I'm telling you, he's you can't go to the rim with him there. It's really hard. You can get a shot off once in a while if you jump into him, but there's no guarantee he's not gonna block it. He gets his hands on a lot of stuff and he knows how to score. Yeah, I'm gonna write about it next week, but there's a lot to his game that goes beyond size. But that is there. That 7'4", 8-foot wingspan is there. Yeah. There are players with 6'10 wingspans in the league that are long. Mm-hmm. And he's got them by 14 inches. That's crazy. I mean,
And
he loves the game. Like, the dude loves to compete. You know, I said this a long time ago. I was doing a TV show locally here. And I don't remember why we were talking about golf. Might have been springtime. We were talking about Tiger Woods. He may have just won his first Masters, maybe his second. I don't remember. It was a long time ago for sure. Definitely in the 90s. The guy I did the show with, he's an ESPN college basketball commentator, Rich Hollenberg. And then he's the studio host for the Tampa Bay Rays. So I could ask him if he remembers. But we were talking about Tiger Woods, and I said then, okay, he's the best in the world now. Let's see how he handles marriage and kids. Like, that's the next thing coming. I can't. Injury is always possible.
Sure, of course.
So injury or sickness. Beyond that, how's he going to handle being a husband? And the pull that is against, away from what you, listen, when you're single, you want to hoop all day, or him play golf all day. When you have kids, like, I trust me, I had PTSD for 6 months after I heard someone dribble the ball in the front yard when my son was already in school. Because I just felt like, should I go out there? I always had this wrestling match with myself. And Victor is on a path we'll see what happens. He's going to meet a girl probably, and he's probably going to have kids. And the Spurs have to do, they have to manage Pop's next few years well. How's he doing as a coach? Last two games, really good for the season. Not good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But if we just can assume more likely scenarios, which we will, he's going to be the best player in the league.
Yeah.
There's no other way to say it.
I mean, he's already 98th percentile in overall EPM right now as a 20-year-old rookie.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, remember, when he started the year, he was negative, right? Like, the defense is good, but offense is bad. But he is rocketed up, like, and it's been really incredible to watch.
Wow.
You know, one of the things, too, that I like about him is, and, you know, oftentimes you'll hear fans and even some media people will say things like, you know, they missed the when players used to have a real, like, competitive edge against one another. And, you know, a lot of the old-time players say, these guys are too friendly. You know, there's not enough, you know, they want to kick each other's ass.
Get the fuck out of here. Right. We all play golf on the weekends and play poker. Come on.
We all think it's bullshit.
Jesus.
However, there is genuine... I'm not going to say animosity, because that's a strong word. But there is dislike between him and Chet, for sure. And you can see it when they play. Chet's even said stuff. And it goes back to when they were under 17 world championship.
Victor beat his ass.
Yeah, it goes back to that. So it's kind of nice that like, you know, you kind of see a little bit of that rivalry. They're both similar body types, tall, thin, like, you know. So I think it'll be a nice little, if, you know, both guys stay healthy, both teams are good, whatever. It'll be nice to have in the Western Conference, same division, maybe? No, Thunder's in the Northwest. Yeah, they're in the Southwest. But, you know, whatever. I think it'll be very cool to kind of see those guys, all things being equal, and they stay healthy, battle it out for the next, hopefully, decade plus, you know, barring injury. That'll be cool.
Listen, Magic used to kiss Isaiah on the cheek before games.
And they want to kick his ass.
Two of the best. they were two of the best teams in the league.
Right.
And we all know what the Dream Team did together, and I realized that was for Team USA. There's always going to be rivalries. These guys grow up playing with each other and against each other. And with the AAU sneaker circuits, they're spending weekends in the same place a lot.
Tournaments,
and that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be buddies. It may mean just the opposite. They're also competing for rankings. That's a big deal because they want to be McDonald's All-Americans. So they got to be – I mean, I've lived through this with players that I help, young guys. I think it's a little bit silly, but that's just how it is. They want to be ranked higher and higher and higher all the time. And then they're competing for money.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. So there's some natural competitiveness there. And yes, in the case of those two guys, what I was told was that Chet's always outplayed other 7-foot guys his age growing up. And his dad used to trumpet that until he first, this is the story I was told by an agent that was at the game. Mm. And then Victor kicked his ass one-on-one. Listen, we're all for it. Kareem was mentored by Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
He famously wrote about it.
Yep.
And Russell to a strong degree. Like, you can do both, but these guys come from different countries and will play against each other, I'm imagining, international events, because Jet projects to be that. He's a perfect international player, shoots threes, blocks shots, just so we need. In fact, I could see him by 2026 starting for us, Chet.
Because
Bam can't shoot. He's our best American center, pretty much.
Correct.
Unless Joel decides to play for us.
With the injury, who knows what Joel's going to do this summer. If I were him, I know what I would not do.
Don't
play Olympic basketball. But that's a whole other, you know.
Yeah. No, but they're allowed to do what they want to do. And I know you know that. Yeah, they're allowed to knock it off the bucket list, whatever. But yeah, I think that those two teams. And then let's just not forget your guy in Memphis.
Yes, correct.
Okay? We've got Ja Morant. We've got Luka in Dallas. Those are really young guys. Zion has kind of hit a ceiling. We'll see what happens in the offseason. Mm-hmm. They're good. Pelicans are a good team.
Yeah.
But there was a period of time where I thought Zion would be an MVP-level player, obviously. He has fallen considerably from there. But all those guys are in the West. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to make for, not to mention some other things, some pretty damn good basketball going forward. Anthony Edwards in Minnesota, obviously.
Oh, I mean, Ant-Man, talk about a guy who just oozes everything and wants it and works. And I mean, and you know, this is what we talk about, David, how difficult it is in this league. You could have all the talent in the world, which we know Zion has. And you're like, look, if he works and wants to do this thing, he can. But it shows you how hard he has to work and do all the things to be there. And hasn't done it to this point, right? That's why he's not among the best players in the world right now at this current moment. Will it change in the summer? Maybe. We'll see. Speaking of summer, I was thinking that the summer calendar, David, is packed. So we have the European Football Championships this summer, which will be great. We have the Olympics this summer.
What does that mean? You mean so, it's just the European World Cup?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Just Euro Cup this summer. And then we have the Olympics starting after that. I mean, it's going to be busy times.
When's the European Football Championships?
June to July. And then the Olympics literally start like 4 days after the end of the European football, which, so for most people don't know this, for most teams, your Olympic football team is your U23. So nobody playing in World Championship European football is going to be on an Olympic team. So it's not going to be any back-to-back tournaments. Almost nobody. In smaller countries, I don't know what their deal is, but in most of those countries,
yeah,
like Kylian Mbappe ain't playing World Cup football and then or European Cup and then playing the Olympics. That's just not happening. But anyway, a lot's happening this summer. It's going to be exciting. And I was thinking about Team USA basketball because you and I did a thing early in the year. We said, who are the best under 25 NBA players? And this is also a little tease, something we got coming out soon. So those of you who are on True Hoop, you know, we did our best player in the world ranking, and David challenged us to say, okay, who will be the best player in the world 5 years from now? And, you know, we have so many talented non-United States-born players in the top of the league right now, David. SGA.
Not according to Gilbert Arenas.
Well, we're not going to discuss that. Not now. Well, we may get to that at a later date on a different bottle in a more nuanced way. But we got, right, we know about Jokic. We know about Doncic. All these amazing players. And I was thinking, you know, Team USA is in an interesting place because they lost the FIBA World Cup last summer. Team Canada won that, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah? With SGA?
Germany won the whole thing.
Germany. Yes, Germany won. Yeah. And I was thinking, ooh. So that was all of our young guys, right? And you know how the conversation is. Oh, the reason we lost is because we didn't have LeBron, Steph, da-da-da. All the names get run. And what ends up happening, eventually social media starts picking up, and all those guys say, definitely in the Olympics next year, but right? All the things that they say. Okay, fine. Moving forward, we're getting close, right? It's time to figure out who's going to be on that team. So LeBron, Steph, KD, all those dudes, they all want to be on the Olympic team. And Durant even made a comment saying, I want to get back to where we were. We were beating teams by 30, 40 points. I'm like, well, buddy, I don't think that's happening anymore.
Never
like happening. That them days are long past. But I was thinking, David, Team USA, if LeBron and Steph and KD and those guys come, the politics of it is they have to play, right? Because why else are they there? But maybe we should be featuring our younger guys more. And the sort of weird sort of balance of these old guys who are still good, but admittedly, none of them are in the top five in EPM right now, right? And this is going to be assumingly for the three of them after some kind of playoff run. Maybe not long, but some kind of postseason run. Is it best maybe to be like, you know, let's just keep doing with our young and featuring our young guys because these old guys aren't there. That's just something I was thinking about today.
Well, good for you, because at my age, I really have struggled thinking down the road. I'm happy to get through today. I got senior night, Friday night with my son. Yeah, I can't look that far ahead other than to say Dwayne Wade joyfully gave up his starting spot for the betterment of the chemistry of the team. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't old, you know? He knew LeBron had and did the same thing for the Heat, but he did for mm-hmm. Team USA first, mm-hmm. which is why I thought they would partner up. So, yeah, we'll see if the old guys recognize their role like Larry Bird did. Yeah, he knew he couldn't play right. His back, whatever. Ego gets in the way. But these guys, they seem to I think they're just excited to play with each other, which could be really beautiful to watch.
Sure. No doubt about it. I just think about the age and the wear and tear, right? Especially for those three in particular. Right? If you're 30, all right, whatever. But 34, 35, 36, and LeBron gonna be 40, like that's a lot crazy to me. That's a lot. But you know, we'll see what happens down the road. All right, David. There were a couple interesting games last night, and we don't really do game like recaps. It's more about, is this something that we can take away from a larger point of view from this game? The Celtics boat raced the Golden State Warriors last night, won by 50-plus points. I mean, that game was over at halftime. It was 82-38. I mean, game was done. So much so, Golden State stars didn't Steph, Draymond, they didn't even come out of the locker room in the second half. Steve Kerr waved the white flag.
It's a wrap.
And the game started interestingly because defensively, the Warriors decided to do something different, which was put Draymond on Jaylen Brown, but have him sag off of Brown, stay closer to the paint to muck things up when the Celtics want to drive into the paint. The Celtics do drive a good ton, right? Get to the paint. As soon as guys collapse, you spray out to all those guys hitting threes and they're just murdering you. They said, oh, Jaylen Brown, you're shooting 34% this season. We dare you, shoot threes. Well, he said, all right, I'll take threes if you want me to. Started nailing them. He had 19 points in the first quarter. I mean, he was awesome. I was like, well, that defensive strategy didn't work out so well.
And you know, see what Draymond said about it?
He was like, yeah, we talked about it 15 minutes before the game. And then he's like, oh, we flush it, we move on. And I was like, maybe. To me, I thought it was very interesting that they did that. And I wonder if it was, I'd love your coach's take on that. What do you think was the reasoning behind that strategy from Golden State?
I really don't know. It's weird, 15 minutes before the game, but I wouldn't say that's unheard of before. To do it that close to the game time, even an hour before the game. It's not terrible strategy to think this guy's struggling to shoot, but I don't think it's smart strategy to just make it so obvious.
So
as opposed to close him out, pay attention to him, don't make it so easy for him. But they did. They made it easy for him, and I didn't see the game, but I watched some other ones. But he made him pay for sure. And Golden State, you can say you're just going to flush and move on. You got drilled so badly.
Drilled.
I've been critical of Golden State because I still, show me their impressive wins. They're not terrible. They've beaten terrible and they've beaten bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing great against good. No. And this is an example of that.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly where I am with you on this. I was actually curious to see how they do this game because they were on a nice little streak.
Right.
They won 13 in the last 15. I'm like, okay, Boston, big test. Let's see how we do.
If they were within 5 points in the fourth quarter and it's a nip and tuck game, I would have been like, okay, you know what? This team is
correct.
Figure some stuff out. Yeah.
I am with you.
No, not.
I saw nothing. And to your point, it was so after the game, and players always say things when they're asked these questions. And of course, I expected Jaylen to say this. He's like, yeah, I thought it was disrespectful that they're trying to get into my head. But you could see in the way Draymond was doing it, right? Because players have ego. We just talked about it before with the Team USA Olympics. When someone turns their back to you, essentially, is like, oh, I'm not worried about you. It's going to bruise your ego at some level, right? These guys all have immense amount of that to make it to this league. And I think it's a famous Michael Jordan meme. I took that personally. Like, he 100% took it personally. And to your point, he made them pay. And they didn't adjust or even do half-hearted closeouts. None of that. And I think the whole Celtics roster, there was something about this win, David, that I don't know. Like, I'm kind of waiting for them to be like, cruise control. But they haven't. Like, at this point of the season, I'm like, okay, they're going to get bored. They're going to lapse. They just keep on cranking. And I love what Mazzulla said after the game for the third quarter. So the reason I kept my guys out there is because we're up 50, 48 points, whatever it was, as you often say, human nature. How do we deal with success? It's easy to come out flat, complacent. Oh, game's in the bag. Everybody's just fooling around out there, not taking it seriously. It's like, I love that my guys outscored them 18, whatever it was, to start the third. Then I took them out. I was like, it seems like a coach who is thinking about the future.
I have a few thoughts on this. So the idea of it being disrespectful. Sorry, Jaylen. This is NBA basketball.
Of course.
They're trying to beat you. Yeah. I don't think it's disrespectful. It's a strategy. The strategy failed. You could take it personally if you want to. You have every right to do that. And it worked for you. But if it didn't work for you, it wasn't disrespectful. It was good strategy. As it turns out, it was not very sound strategy. So deal with it. But he's sensitive to stuff like that, I think, a lot.
Mm.
But who cares if he responds this way?
Correct.
Knock yourself out. Just like Jordan. Jordan, imagine all these people doubting him. No one ever did. Worked to his favor very well. That's what he needed. I think that I thought a lot about Joe Mazzulla recently. I thought a lot about him. He was just so weird a year ago, given Ime's team after the great run Udoka's team had won two games in the finals. They're up 2-1, game four at home. And all of a sudden, it's your team. Like, just imagine. You never see that coming. You never see that coming the way it did. It wasn't like they were losing 5 of 6 and all of a sudden there's a coaching change. No, it was something off the court. And it's just got to be weird to make that your team. He's made that his, they're his team now.
Oh, 100%.
They're his team. And they're favorites for a reason. They have the best record. They've done this three times now. They beat Indiana by over 50, mm-hmm. beat Boston. I forget the third team they did, but they've beaten three teams.
Yeah. Yes, they have. Only team in NBA history to win three games by 50-plus points in a season.
Oh, is that right? There you go. That's not nothing, in my opinion.
I agree.
So it doesn't mean they'll win the postseason, but we know they're the strongest team. Now they've got to prove it, but they've got
correct.
They've got an edge about them. I almost always pick the field over a team.
Of course.
And their lack of edge does concern me. Right, but I lean to Boston right now as being the most likely scenario to win a championship.
And they did it yesterday's game without Porzingis as well. He did not play yesterday.
Yeah, which is not nothing. That's amazing.
Correct. It's not that I didn't like them under Udoka. Like, I don't dislike and like teams in that way, but I like them better now under one. And it's like, yes, I know the pieces are better, but I like how they play better now this season offensively under Mazzulla.
Well, you could thank Derek and Drew for that.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys are. Derek White leads the NBA in how much his team has won by when he's on the court in terms of raw numbers.
Yes, he's outstanding.
Number one. I looked it up yesterday. Number one. Yeah.
They're going to. Yes, favorites in the East for sure. Denver, I think. Denver's Boston, I think, is the betting favorite to get to the championship game. It's 5-1 odds. Those are the best odds right now. That potential. And you know, we know injuries can happen, and that's the nature of this sport. But right now, Boston's looking so good. I was thinking about strategies, David. You talked about it, right? Okay, so their strategy was let Jaylen Brown shoot. Didn't work out. They got burned. And I was thinking conversely, it was another game last night, and it was Phoenix and OKC. Second night of a back to back for Phoenix. After a bad loss to Houston for them the night before. No Booker in that game for Phoenix. And OKC went with the, all right, we only got Beal and KD out there. Especially if it's only one of them, we're going hard doubles to them every time they cross half court. And that strategy worked effectively. Now, the Suns were down big early and fought back and took a 6-point lead in the fourth. So eventually they figured it out, but ended up still losing the game. Beyond execution, what is the difference between a strategy being effective and non-effective, like we saw in those two games?
Well, you have to compare how the outcome was to what it might have been had you not used the strategy. And so if one way to look at it would be this team's going to beat us by 30 points. If I change the strategy, I don't know if we'll win, but I think we'll be competitive in the fourth quarter and then at least put some pressure on them. That would be that's a sound strategy, right? Or if you feel like when you're coaching younger teams, not NBA teams, they may have one stud. And if you say, we're not going to let that guy beat us. Like, I remember one time my son was in seventh grade and we played up to an eighth grade team. Our seventh grade team was very good. And their eighth grade team was their own school team. It was like eighth grade private mm-hmm. school team. And they had a stud lefty. And I was able to coach my son's team that game. And I said, we're doubling on the catch, not the dribble. What eighth grader has seen that before? and our team was very good. And I think he had 3 points. We kicked their ass. But after the game, if we had lost by 15 and we made those other guys beat us, to me, it was still a sound strategy because I knew we couldn't stop that dude with one dude and we'd be in big trouble. And so that's strategy, right? So doubling KD in the NBA when they know it's coming, which I watched the game, I watched a third quarter today. They didn't always know where and when it was coming. You're hoping to catch Phoenix off a little bit. If you do it every time, they know it's coming and they can organize pretty well behind it. Because then it's 4-3 everywhere else when you pass out of the double team, which KD knows how to do. But they caught him a couple of different spots where KD seemed surprised. And the team didn't organize to get the ball maybe to the middle of the floor or to give him a pressure release above him vertically. If he's on the wing, the middle's covered, he's got to throw it up the court. You don't want to throw it in the corner. Someone's got to be there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and it also, you're trying to keep KD from getting a rhythm. You're trying to keep KD You're trying to get him a little uncomfortable. So when he does get the ball, maybe he misses one more shot in three than two. You know, he might make two of three typically. Maybe now he makes one of three over a stretch. All those things matter. So listen, lots of other things too. You can take some defensive strategies just to inspire your team, get your team more energized. One thing I used to hate about playing zone, I grew up only teaching man-to-man, is I thought my guys got lazy. But once I was able to really get, I was in my 30s and 40s at this point, once I was able to get teams to be just as active in zone than they were, and they were as they were in man, it was more effective as a zone. I wasn't afraid to use it on occasion. And I was just telling you guys, one of my former players from the 80s, who was a great, great player for us when I was a coach, he just won his first state championship as a high school coach. His team is terrific. They made three straight Final Fours and get everyone back for next year, a famous school called Gibbs High School in St. Pete. And they beat a great team, Andrew Jackson, who had beaten them early in the year. And I was so happy. I didn't see the game. It was Saturday afternoon. I really wanted to go. It's just an hour away. The head coach, Larry Murphy, after the game, he talked about going zone in the second half. And he said, I don't think we played 20 minutes of zone all year. And I know he's thinking, thanks, Coach Thorpe, because he played 0 seconds of zone when he played for me in the 80s. I had him for two seasons, his last 2 years. And he said, but we've been he said this to the media. We've been practicing the zone just for this team. And that's smart. So part of good strategy is make sure you do stuff that you have practiced before. If you're trying something you've never done before, it's much riskier. Doesn't mean it can't work on occasion. It can't. It's much riskier. You want to do in games that which you've practiced.
Yeah.
And so you know, people know Miami is going to play a zone. Doesn't mean they can necessarily solve it because of the activity of the Heat defense and also how they might play some things. If going into the next game, Phoenix, let's say this was a series, Phoenix versus Clippers. I'm sorry, Phoenix versus Thunder, which we might see.
Mm-hmm.
We could see that.
Very true.
They should be much more ready for these doubles. And so when they double on the catch as opposed to the dribble, let's make sure we run a guy here, run a guy here. And who is going to those spots matters too. And they'll be ready.
I think that's so illustrative what you just broke down there. And you mentioned earlier, you said, you know, you want to get KD out of rhythm. And after the game, he said that, right? It's tough to get your rhythm when the double teams, I'm not exactly sure where it's coming from, right? And to make a player that has that many reps, who's seen it, seen a lot of stuff, unsure, that's what you want, right? Because it's hesitancy, which is all you need to give you the advantage on defense. But I love your point about release valves. And so an average fan watches a game, David, and they'll see a turnover. Oh, Kevin, that was a dumb pass. Why'd you do that?
They'll blame the passer, yeah.
Right. But how much of it is, to your point, who is going where and where are you spaced out on the floor? If he's trapped in the corner, well, you guys have to give him some places to see, right? Or if he's up near the corner of the top of the key, right? Where is everybody else on the floor so we can see? Because he's tall, he's 7 feet tall, right? Give him angles to see and get you the ball so you can release out of that. How important is that? And how do you drill that into a team?
You should be doing this when you're young. This is, you know, one of the things you do when you start coaching middle school age kids is, at least I did, you teach them how to go to the ball, not away from the ball. So last night, watching a G League game, two nights ago, I was watching a G League game, and a player that I helped was dribbling near half court as a quarter was ending. He got double teamed. All of his teammates were just running away from him, oblivious what was going on. He tried to throw a pass to the nearest guy. It got picked off. They made a pass. One of my other guys hit a three at the buzzer. And so I texted the guy that turned it over. Like, I said, you have the privilege going forward. When your four teammates basically say, fuck you, you're on your own. When you're doubled, just punt the ball away, which means throw it all the way down the court. There's like a few seconds left to go in the quarter. Don't give them a chance to get a shot. And if your teammates say, what are you doing? You say, I don't trust you motherfuckers. If you guys, someone had come back to me, I'd have easily executed the pass, but you didn't. So I got to make sure the bad guys don't get it, right? You can't run away from that stuff. The NBA does have traps. We do have zones, and we have zones and we have traps. And so I definitely, on occasion, even this year, I've reminded players, you have to make sure to fill that middle. When you see a teammate getting trapped in the flanks and the side thirds, you know, think of the court in three thirds.
Yep.
And they're on one of the two side thirds. You got to get to the middle third and you've got to get open. You've got to look for the ball and you've got to come to it to shorten the passing angle. Otherwise, the longer of a passing line there is, lane, the more able these super quick long guys can get a hand into it and deflect it or steal it. So you've got to close the angle off. We talk a lot about spacing. Spacing works both ways. We want enough spacing to create bigger gaps so that a defender can't guard two guys at once. In other words, he can't help on my drive and easily recover to when I kick out for three. Mm-hmm. So you want a better space than that. But you can't have so much spacing that if I throw a pass from A to B, it's going to get picked off
right. Because
he's too far away, which happens a lot in these trapping situations. So you want to close the space up some when there's two on the ball.
No, this is huge. And yeah, I think you're right. Like in a series, these are the things you change, right? So you're like, all right, game two, make sure whoever's here, the release valve is here. And to your point, getting big so your teammate can see you, so you can cut right, so you can actually get the ball to him, or, you know, in that scenario, it's huge, huge thing.
And KD will be more aware of where he catches the ball if he knows they might be trapping me on the catch, which he's dealt with this before. But right. Mindfulness is everything. I mean, people ask me, what is it I'm doing with these players? Am I really teaching them? No, I am younger guys, maybe. I mean, I had a guy, a tall wing, was trying to take a really agile big off the dribble and ISO. My guy is a good ball handler, but he just tried to make a simple crossover speed attack. Well, that defender who's 6'10" is really agile. He can easily run with you, which he did. I had to tell him this is a rookie. You got to change you got to go to break more. Sudden stop, sudden start. That's what big guys tend to have more problems with because their center of gravity is so high. So I don't have to teach that to a veteran.
Right.
But I may have to make him mindful. He's not heard it before. He's heard it before. He just wasn't thinking about it necessarily. So it changes over time. There's nothing wrong with mindfulness. Mm-hmm. I promise you. Chris Paul makes mistakes of a lack of paying attention. So does Steph Curry. So does KD. So does LeBron. They all do. They just do less of it than what they did when they were younger, not as smart. So our job is to coach up the young guys and help them, the older guys, be mindful of what they had to be thinking about in certain situations.
No, absolutely. All right, guys, we'll be back after a quick break. All right, David, another game from last night that gave me shades of 1990s basketball. You mentioned a playoff potential between OKC and Phoenix. Well, another playoff potential we could see is the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the LA Clippers. And boy, that was a rock fight last night.
Second round action.
Yeah. 80. What was the final score? 80. It was in the 80s. I feel like that final 80s. Score.
Eight. Yeah. Eight in the 80s. Yeah.
I was like, man, this is, I mean, you, I was like, I didn't ever think I'd see that in today's basketball. We turned back the hands of time. Some of it was some good defense. Some of it was just shot missing. You know, guys miss shots. It happens. But the physicality, I thought, was there too. I mean, we know Minnesota plays that kind of brand of defense. The Sixers, the Clippers have big wing players who can be physical too. You know, it's kind of fun. I don't want to see this on a regular steady diet in my life, but I thought it was fun.
So first of all, to anyone listening, if you go to games, we need a better atmosphere in NBA arenas in regular season. I watched... Baylor versus Kansas.
Oh, Big 12, a huge rivalry. Yeah, yeah.
Man, was that exciting. Mm-hmm. I watched it. I didn't see Alabama, Tennessee. I haven't talked to Ryan yet. He called me, but like I know it was my brother watched it. One of my brothers watched it. Like every time the bad guys have the ball, the home team is making noise. In the NBA, nothing. Like I was watching third quarter Clippers, Minnesota.
Yeah.
These are contenders.
Correct.
Right? Top four teams in the West.
Yep.
Plenty of superstars, mm-hmm. current and future.
Mm-hmm.
And LA's got the ball. It's in Minnesota. I hear the announcer's just fine. They're just having a conversation. Like people are in the stands, they're talking, they're on their phones, they're just kibitzing and like, what are we doing? Come on, people, have fun. So separate from that, I wanted to say that. I really thought the two teams competed defensively really hard.
They
was really impressed with that. And yeah, there's always going to be missed shots. But I thought that the level of defensive effort was elite on both teams. James Harden was well guarded by McDaniels.
He's a good defender.
I talked to a knowledgeable insider today. Who with the Clippers, who thinks that's going to happen more and more, but put a long, quick guy on him. He just can't do what he used to be able to do. But he had 10 assists, one turnover. I don't think he made a field goal in the game.
No.
But 10 assists, one turnover.
That's pretty good.
He had a couple of free throws. And he D'd up Cat pretty well. Cat was good, but Harden D'd him up good. That'll be a very interesting series. Kawhi and Paul George kind of were the difference when it mattered, but Minnesota definitely didn't play very well either in the fourth quarter.
No, they third quarter. They you mentioned McDaniels. I mean, you've talked about him forever, David. He's such a good defender. I like him a lot. He's so long, and he, you know, you always talk about disposition. He has the disposition to want to lock up the other opponent, and that so much of it is that want to do that, even though he knows, oh, I might get embarrassed with a cross or whatever. So what? Like, he's still sticking his face in there, really guarding. Yeah, and they're young, this team. So I'm excited. Look, we have our issues with them, especially when they turn the ball over the way they do on offense, and all that for the playoffs are going to be concerning. But, you know, the old adage, right? Defense travels. Well, you know, if they can play that kind of defense they have all regular season in the postseason, they will be in any series. The question is, will they make enough shots down the stretch and not turn the ball over or whatever? I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell us on that. A couple teams in the NBA still on winning streaks right now. Not still, but on winning streaks. You mentioned the Celtics, 11 straight now for them. Good God. The Nuggets, I feel like I used my car analogy last week. They're shifting gears, David. Six straight. They're like, and it's the games that they're winning. Oh, everyone's talking about, the Warriors won a hot streak. Nope, beat them by 10 plus. Oh, the Lakers, nope, beat them by 10 plus. Every team that like, ooh, this team might be doing something, the Nuggets kind of just show up and they're like, they're doing that championship thing where it's like, you know, we were kind of coasting a little bit. We talked about Jokic this morning, how you're like, you think he has 35% more to give. I'm not saying the team is 35, but I think they're doing something similar where they have another 15 to 20 to really kick in. And they do it on some games when they're like, all right, let's remind everybody we're the defending champs. But I like how they're playing right now.
If you're Denver, you've got months left to go. And so you have to cool it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. My gut feeling is that Jokic has a lot more.
That's scary. Good luck.
He's the third best friend in the league right now, metrics wise.
Right. Playing at 75% or whatever.
They're a very professional organization. They know what they're doing. They know they've got the same core for years now. Mm-hmm. Same with Miami for the most part. Like some of the many guys are the same systems. Big advantage.
Yeah. Michael Porter Jr. playing well for them. Murray, like that. Aaron Gordon. They won the championship last year. So nothing that they see in the postseason now will faze them. They've gotten over that part, right? This team's been up three, whatever. They've lost, blown series. All the things have happened to them. So it won't be those kind of moments that frighten them or whatever. If they get beat, it's because you're playing better and they're playing poorly and you're making them play poorly. That's what's going to have to happen. And right now, I don't know if I can see any team doing that 4 out of 7, but we still have 5.5 weeks to go or so before the playoffs start. The Bucks, a team who they got Dame, we're like, oh, okay, whatever. They got Doc, and we're like, eh, okay, whatever. nothing thrilled us about either of those two things, but they are winning. David, they've won five in a row. Have they figured anything out, or is this just scheduling? They played some bum teams, whatever. Still not sold on them come the postseason.
They've definitely learned that. I think they already knew this. Making 3-point shots is good. They're shooting, but much better. Yeah. Like top 8 in percentage, maybe top 4 in attempts. Giannis, 20 for 52 in 2024. So not a lot,
right?
But he's not, you know, 1 for 6 mm-hmm. taking 52 and made 20. Mm-hmm. So he's in 2024. It's not like he's doing the last 2 weeks. Right. He's been very impressive, sure. I'm not convinced. They're playing much better offense and much better defense, but they also, in this 5-week game win streak, they've beaten nobody. Charlotte, Chicago, I think they have one good win.
Right.
I forget. I think one good team, which is fine. But just like Golden State, I need to see it. I'm not convinced it'll happen again. They're going to be fine. I don't know how good they'll be.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
They're not going to be terrible.
No. And look, you have Giannis, which means they're going to have a chance in any series, right? Because that guy's really still good at basketball.
And Dame.
Yeah. The Orlando Magic, one of our favorite teams of the year. You love what Jamal Mosley's done. Mark Daniel's probably going to win Coach of the Year, but Mosley will probably get a lot of votes because this team, I mean, David, right now they're in sixth place. Now, I know the East is a little topsy-turvy and things can happen, but I will remind everybody, the Knicks now are going to have to deal with Jalen Brunson for some period. I don't know how long. And we'll get to the injuries in a minute. We know about Philly, who had a nice win against Dallas, by the way, yesterday without Embiid. So a nice win for
really
Philly
nice yesterday. Win. Yeah.
Very good. Maxie was good. Tobias yeah,
nice
was
job,
good.
Jason Kidd.
Yeah. You can always tell who David thinks are good coaches in this league and who aren't good coaches. We know how he feels about Jason Kidd and Darvin Ham. Very clear. But listen, the results speak for themselves.
I have more patience with Darvin. He's in his second year. Yeah. It's a hard, mm-hmm. yeah. I have no patience for Jason Kidd. But listen, again, I've said this before. When he publicly said, I'm just like you guys just watching the game, that was it for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We're paying you to watch the game too.
So I love what Orlando's doing right now. Look, for them, it's all about growing in steps and moving forward as an organization. The young talent getting better, which we think it is. Defensively, they're playing well. All these amazing things. As it stands right now, David, and of course this can change literally tonight. They're in sixth, and the Cavaliers are in third. That's an interesting first round matchup: Cavaliers versus the Magic. That series is split 2-2. Now, Cleveland, the better team by all the metrics and everything, but listen, it's not like the Cavs are littered with tons of playoff experience besides Donovan Mitchell. Jared Allen's got a little bit. Some of the guys got a little bit from last year, but listen, that could be a 2-2 series, and all of a sudden, it's going back home for game five, and Cleveland's feeling pressure. I mean, we're a ways off from that, but I thought that would be pretty interesting if that happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, Orlando has been a bad offensive team and an elite defensive team all year. In 2024, I think they're 11th in offense, and they're not where they need to be and where they can be. Wagner is not shooting well. Franz is playing well, not shooting well. Paolo is shooting okay, not finishing great. Mm-hmm. He's a long way from being the player. I mean, he's not an all-star. Right. I know he made it.
Yeah, I think because injuries, he didn't get voted. He got picked, and I think it was. Right.
He's not an all-star yet, but he's moving the right direction. They get after it defensively. They have a lot of length and quickness, and they disrupt you. I would not expect them to win a playoff series.
No.
They're a great story. They're definitely a great story.
Yeah, I love what they're doing. It's just nice to see those teams that have been perpetually terrible.
Yeah.
Start playing good again. We're looking at you, Charlotte. You're next on the list. Will you ever be good in the future? No. Not looking great in the short term. Though you like Brandon Miller. You think Brandon's got a chance to be good.
I think he's really talented, super talented player, yeah. And Mark Williams I like a lot, too.
Just a question of, if that is the right place to incubate and nurture that talent. Yeah. So far, the answer is no. Yep. But
they got a new GM who's got Florida State connections.
That's right.
I've heard good things about
him. Yep, came from the Nets.
Mm-hmm. Came from the Nets. So I'm hoping that they figure it out.
Yeah, no, for sure. Dave, we mentioned injuries and how, as they do every year, they're going to decide so much of what happens the rest of the season. Jalen Brunson has a knee contusion. That's what Tom Thibodeau said yesterday. I don't know if any scans are done yet. I haven't checked. We'll find out what happens there, what that means. This team's already kind of decimated injury-wise. If they lose him, forget it. I mean, it's gonna be a free fall. And that part of the West, or the East, excuse me, is just jumbled, right, with teams that are all half a game within each other. So it's
right there,
the Knicks, Sixers, Magic, Heat, and Pacers. All those teams are within a game and a half of each other. I mean, you lose three games in a row, you're going to find yourself heading towards that play-in. You win three in a row, you're going to be back up in the top six. So it makes it, for fans anyway, exciting to watch the end of the regular season, because who knows where your team's going to be. For the Clippers, this is a big deal. Russell Westbrook, fractured hand. I don't know how long he's going to be out. Big part of their bench and what they do in terms of the athleticism he brings off the floor, getting to the paint, putting pressure on the defense. So something they're going to have to watch as well. And then less so, because this team is not going to make the play-in. But Scottie Barnes also fractured, I want to say, the middle finger on his hand. So he's going to be out for some time as well.
Yeah, stinks.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about it? If the injuries are where they are, I hope Brunson gets back. It really would be terrible for the Knicks to not have him. Mm-hmm. I hope they get Mitchell Robinson back and Julius Randle, I think's
coming.
I just saw Embiid's practicing.
Yeah, he did his first media appearance last week, and he said, "No matter what the record is, I'm gonna come back this season." It's like, okay. Again, I'm not even gonna say. I was gonna say I trust, but I don't. I was gonna say I trust the team doctors. I don't trust the team doctors. I trust that Joel's people and his team are going to do what is in his best interest so that they're not doing any further damage when he comes back this season.
We're going to hang our hat on that.
That's all we can do. And on the Knicks as well, OG also making progress to come back. Again,
right.
Decimated with injuries. But if those guys come back on this road trip or get themselves back together soon, they'll be in a good spot going forward. All right, folks, we'll be back on Thursday. A special episode, I think, coming out this week. Henry and I are going to talk to the author of a book called Mind Games. So that episode will probably come out this week, too. So we'll have an extra bonus episode for you. And David and I will be back on Thursday. Take care.